Hello.
Hey, Merlin.
Yes.
It's Bridget. How you
Hi,
doing?
Bridget. Is that how you pronounce it? Bridget?
Bridget, yeah.
Bridget, nice to talk to you.
Hey, good to talk to you as well. Thank you so much for making time to talk with me.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Yeah, so are we recording? Are we ready to go?
Yeah, we're rolling.
Okay, great. And Merlin, are you rolling on your end?
Yeah, I'm recording my end in call recorder so I can send a .mov file for you.
Okay, that sounds great. All right, well, so first of all, thank you so much for agreeing to talk with me. And I'm not quite sure if I should say this from the outset, but I kind of hate you.
Join the club.
You came up with the idea of inbox zero as sort of the ultimate nirvana, the utopia that we all need to get to in this crazy making world of email.
Is that what I did?
You know, I believed you.
Did you read it? Did you really read it?
Oh, well, I listened to your Google talk that you 2007. And I just want to say I have spent the entire night not going to bed, just intent on cleaning out my inbox, getting to inbox zero, you know, to look and see that it was 7 a.m. and it was time to like get up and start the day.
This is going to be a very interesting call then.
Because
you're doing it wrong, Bridget. That's not what it's for.
Okay, well, good. Because, yeah, I still haven't written my second book because I'm so focused on cleaning out my damn inbox.
Well,
so
let's not worry about inbox zero so much, but let's see what we can do to help you. We can get you out of this situation and focused on the stuff you'd really like to be doing.
Okay, but what I really want to do is I want to start with you and talk about how you came up with the idea of Inbox Zero. You know, tell me about your own story. Like, what were you seeing and what were you experiencing with email? Because I don't think it's any surprise. You just Google email overload and there's Twitter feeds and there's people who are struggling with it. There's tips and tricks and people mm-hmm. who have coaching jobs. I mean, email is something people really struggle with. So tell me your own story.
Well, it started out when I was doing, at this point, 11, 12 years ago, I was doing a website about personal productivity and Mac stuff. And people just kept, I was very interested in email as a problem to be solved. And a lot of my readers were also just kind of at wit's end a lot of the time. And, you know, this is, again, the mid-2000s. So at this point, we're probably 7 or so years into the widespread adoption of the internet and consequently email. And I think that by that time, people were realizing that pretty much anything could be in your email, in your inbox, if you like, waiting for you. And whatever came along, you had to deal with it. And I think at that time, there was still a fairly common feeling. Some people still very much have, which is anything that comes into my inbox is something I need to reply to. It's something I need to do something about. And the problem is that stuff really accumulates. And part of the problem I was trying to solve, you can argue whether or not I help with that, but the problem I wanted to solve was how do I let this become less of a thing that controls my life by deciding I'm going to treat it differently than I've been treating it. And that's much easier said than done. But the basic notion was to spend a lot less time doing email. But when you do email, to really do it. And if I had to put it into a sentence, it would be if you have time to check email, you have time to do something with that email. Otherwise, you shouldn't even bother checking. And a lot of times that's deleting it. It's archiving it. It's just not doing anything at all. It could be a short response, but I have to get it out of the way straight ahead. I never said inbox zero does not mean sit in your inbox all day and get rid of email. That's quite the opposite of what I said, let alone intended. It's been willfully misperceived and kind of it's a fun joke now. But the truth of it is the real zero is how much of your mind is on email when you're trying to do your actual work. And I wouldn't begin to say that that's a simple or easy problem to solve, but there are ways to do it. No matter what solution you come up with, it's going to take a change of your own attitude and then a very mindful attempt to set yourself to having the life that you want to have rather than feeling led around by a bunch of bits and bytes on your computer. That's how I came to it. I came to it because I struggled with it. My readers struggled with it. And to be honest, I found that it was a topic people were very interested in on an ongoing basis. That led to the series that became called Inbox Zero and the Google Talk, et cetera. And now today, it's I don't take any ownership of it anymore because people have gotten it so mangled that I just don't have the energy to fight it anymore.
So So what do you call it now? I mean, I like that idea that what you're talking about is almost like mindset zero, you know, that
the name is really, to me, is very inconsequential. What I'm saying, I think what I said from the beginning is not surpassingly difficult to anybody who read to the final period, which is that your problem is that you have let this inbox become a source of anxiety by accepting this as an input that you're going to treat in a given way. We all have to treat basically one of my tentpole ideas personally is that anything that is an inbox in your life, and that could be, it could be your email, it could be Slack, it could be a person in your life. Anything that you are responsible for taking care of and doing something about necessarily contains things that are unknown, very likely contains things that are undefined. And then on top of it all, contains things that are incomplete. And if you think about that crazy idea for a minute, you're going to let this thing run your life. You would not put up with a cutlery drawer that sometimes had a Wolverine in it. Like, how could you run your life out of something where it, literally anybody can put anything in there? And if you carry around this mantle, this responsibility that you're going to respond to every one of them, you're a crazy person. So, I mean, it's fine. I'm glad people like the idea. It's a cute name. I kind of at this point regret ever saying it. All I ever wanted to do was help myself and help other people get their brain out of this idea that they had to be controlled by this thing, that they basically, people would essentially have a second job, which was just doing their email. And at some point, that is not sustainable. You have to say to yourself, well, if this is an input that I'm going to accept, I'm going to treat it in the following way. Another way to look at it, you don't go to your cubbyhole in kindergarten anymore because you're not in kindergarten anymore. Like, do you need, that's not an input that you need to know about. No one stands over their mailbox at home for 18 hours a day. You check the email once and then you get back to making bacon or whatever. So that's
right,
really,
there's,
I mean,
not that much stuff in your inbox. You know, I mean, that's the thing. You're talking about how you think about this input, but this input is never ending. You know, if I go to my mailbox, it's usually just junk mail and maybe a Christmas card or two in December. Mm-hmm. But, you know, quickly you sort through it, you find your bill and you recycle everything else. But you can't ever seem to do that with email. And I think, you know, like what you're talking about, that it's crazy making the Wolverine in the cutlery drawer. But I would argue just talking to people and seeing what's being written out there, I think a lot of us are living with the Wolverine in the drawer and we are letting it drive us and drive our days. I mean, right. If you look at some of the research like Bain and Company and McKinsey and others, they've looked at sort of how, in particular, knowledge workers who really need email and use email and how they work. And they'll spend, I think the research is something like between emails and meetings, the average middle manager spends only 6 hours a week on sort of concentrated, important, meaningful work. So I would argue that the Wolverine is like running roughshod over all of us. And shouldn't we be concerned about that? And I like the idea, you know, you've got tips and tricks and you can find them and they're all kind of the same and they all make sense. Chunk your time, check emails in a certain time period, filter things out. If it were easy, we'd all be doing it. So how do we need to shift the way we think about email?
Well, I feel in some ways I don't like to strain this analogy too much, but I do think that the postal mail analogy, it's not completely apt, but it's pretty close. In several senses. I mean, in one sense, like I said, you wouldn't spend all day just waiting for your mail to arrive. I mean, well, sure, you're going to get email every few seconds, so you got to check the email. A lot of it is an expectations game. It's a question of the expectations that you perceive coming from other people and the expectations that you have of yourself. There's no tip, trick, life hack, anything that's going to help you unless you get down to addressing how you look at this input in your life and what you're committed to doing about it. But to put it a slightly different way, all those tricks out there that are based on getting a plug-in or wearing some kind of a special email hat or whatever, well, let's look at it this way. Let's say you don't like what's in your email inbox and it's coming too much. If you're getting stuff from bill collectors, right? Well, you know, it's not the postal service's fault that you got a bill collector notice. Like, if you paid the bill, you wouldn't get that notice. The other part of the problem here is it's how we... When I say those expectations, like how do we deal with our colleagues? What expectation do we create with them? What is the culture of our team, our company, our organization? Is this sustainable for everybody? Is this where we want to be doing that? And I'm happy to explore this any direction you want. But, you know, I think a lot of it is a reluctance to realize that you can't do everything. And it's a reluctance because, you know, nobody likes to let other people down. Nobody likes to say no. Nobody likes to be obdurate or tardy. It makes us feel bad. We feel bad about ourselves. We feel like we're being disrespectful of others. But I just feel like for that term, knowledge worker is a good term, but it refers to somebody who adds value to information that ends up creating some kind of a product, service, whatever it is that we all make. We all have a role on the team. It's just difficult for me to understand people who have willingly accepted that. If let's say, for example, you're a manager. If you're a manager and you're mainly communicating with other people, that makes a ton of sense. But if you're somebody who's a developer or you're somebody who's an engineer, it's difficult for me to understand how you could tolerate spending that much time, or, to be honest, and this takes some courage, to sustain that level of accountability for yourself that people now you're responding. Guess what? You're building an expectation.
Right.
You're saying to somebody, my time is so it's so up for grabs that I'll stop whatever I'm doing and take care of it. And there are times when that's like with you. I think I responded to your emails pretty quickly. You know why?
You did.
Because I look at my email once and I'm done. I'm done. And I think I pretty quickly said, let's schedule this right now. We didn't have 17 different exchanges about needing to go out and have a cup of coffee and talk about it. There's action. Every one of those emails is a request for action. You decide, will I take the action? When will I do the action? Where will I do the action? Can I do this now and be done with it? That is a very practical approach, but it's all underpinned by a philosophical difference in the way that you choose to look at any input in your life. This is just the one where you feel the most pain. And I think that's difficult for people, and I think it's especially difficult when you feel like you're the only one on the team who's having trouble holding up your end. So what are you going to do? You're going to make yourself crazy? I just don't think it's a smart way to live.
Yeah, it's so interesting, though. You're talking about that sense of feeling badly, and that's a really human notion. The behavioral scientist, Dan Ariely, the way he described email, it's like, you know, it's like when somebody taps you on the shoulder, you know, what are you going to do? You're not going to turn around? You know, that there's something that feels sort of very rude or, I don't know, very sort of doesn't jive with our notions of ourselves as sort of good or nice or people if we ignore all of that stuff in there. And yet on the flip side, like you say, if you respond to everything, then you've just made everybody else's priorities, you know, your agenda.
Which, well, and it varies, you know, it varies so much by team, by vocation. Something I learned very early on giving this talk and being very strident about this position that you shouldn't spend all your time in email. Well, a lot of people, especially sort of low to middle level people in an organization, would say, well, if I don't check my email, my boss is going to think that I'm not working, that I'm not responding quickly enough. So there is another part of this that I do want to underscore, which is it depends on what is okay with your team and your group. I know that's not an easy conversation to have, but I don't know if, you know, email, there's lots of other avenues now. To be honest, I have to tell you, for years, I feel like the thing that has overtaken email as the most maddening thing is meetings. That's the thing that kills a lot of people's time at scale and continues to be really frustrating. But there are things like Slack. There are so many different ways you can choose to communicate with more precision and brevity. And I think when teams have an opportunity to greatly improve the culture of how they work together, when they explore tools that are there to solve a problem rather than just open the passage to its largest aperture. There's a reason your house has a door. You're not a jerk for closing your door after 6 o'clock. You're not a jerk to close your door at all. It's your house. But that expectation is so different. You would think it's weird if a vacuum salesman shows up at 2 a.m. But in this case, anybody's allowed to bug you about anything. And how often have you gotten that email? That email that's basically some kind of tragic information stew where there might be one bit of meat in the penultimate paragraph. And it's your job to go in there like some kind of forensic scientist and find out what they're asking about. Like, is that okay on your team? But there's a lot of levels to it. And, you know, another tentpole for me is that whenever you try to solve any problem in self-help and productivity, you have to understand what problem you're trying to solve, at what level, for what reason. There's no magic wand that's going to make this go away. And guess what? This is going to be the rest of your life. This is not something that's going to go away. You need to get a healthy attitude about what you're able to do, what you're going to commit to do, and that will still let you be a wholesome and healthy person without feeling like you're 100% available to 100% of the world 100% of the time.
So talk about your own story. You know, was there a time when you were 100% available to 100% of the world 100% of the time?
I feel like in some ways that's the default state for most of us since, you know, since the mid to late 90s, since email became an inexpensive and very, I would say almost a very democratic thing. You know, long before Twitter, it was pretty neat that I could write an email to Jack Klugman from The Odd Couple and say, hey, I really liked you on The Odd Couple. He never wrote back.
Did you do that?
Of course I did. I had a whole book of addresses of famous celebrities.
That's awesome.
But that was, that's in some ways, that's kind of cool. But I certainly wouldn't send him like a 35-paragraph email and a demand that he, you know, conduct my wedding. Like, did that's super weird.
But did he respond to you?
He didn't. He's a very busy guy, and I know he had throat problems. But here's another part of this, though, is that, like, let's go back to first principles. Because you are so available, that means that you can receive, I don't want to sound negative, but you could receive some very ill-formed, poorly thought out, non-actionable stuff from just about anybody. And I think that can make you feel like a little bit nuts. I would never want to personally want a customer service job because I would find that so difficult to do. So as to me and my story, I mean, I got on the internet in 1993, back before there really was a graphical internet. It was just a little telnet program to get on the internet, and email was a joy. It was so fun to like basically be talking to my friend who went to Oxford, and I'd write to him and he'd write back. But the expectations were so different then. Back then, to get on the internet, this is for you youths out there, this is many years ago, to get on the internet, you had to be at a computer with a modem or a hardwired connection, and basically it was like going to mass to go to your email. You went to email and you did the email, and then you went back to your job, and there was absolutely zero expectation that you were going to be able to do, honestly, there was no expectation you'd be able to do anything about it right then. You use a fax for something important like that. Just that really changed. Like I say, it's not costly. It's easy for people to have. And in the absence of a culture that guides people toward what is okay and not for the team, it becomes the Wild West. And the person with, how often have you gotten that email that CC'd to 25 people, where it's to 25 people as well as no one in particular, and nobody does anything about it, or they spend their day running around. Yeah, so that's my story.
All the time.
Yeah, that's basically it. It's just like everybody else. And you know, the whole point of the site, I used to do 43 folders, was just to help people. I came to that site as someone who needed that site because I was working as a project manager at the time. And project managers get a lot of email. But I felt like I was a smart enough guy. Like, I'd gone to college and stuff and I had experience, but I still had trouble like putting my hands around the modern digital problem of how we deal with others. And so trying to schedule conference calls with people on three continents back before we had the tools we have now used to be very, very difficult. So I was really suffering. And then I tried to find sensible methods for people that, yeah, there would be tips, there'd be tricks, I have all kinds of thoughts on how to write a good subject line, how to write a good short email that'll get action from people or get a response from people, how to make it easy for people. I have lots of thoughts on that. What I don't have a solution for is how to stop billions of strangers from having access to you in a way that you have no control over. Only you can decide how you're going to govern that.
Yeah. So did you get to that point though? I mean, did you have a breaking point where like, this is crazy. This is too much, you know, cause it's interesting. I was looking to see who researched email. I wanted to see, is there some expert that I could talk to? Like, what's the proper way to think about email since it's driving all of us crazy?
Right.
And I came across some, you know, some of the research that's been done is sort of in the computer science field itself, sort of a groundbreaking paper in the 1990s that was updated 10 years later. And the bottom line was, wow, email's a real problem. We need more research. It's like nobody knows what the answer is. So did you come to some kind of breaking point where you're like, there is no answer. I got to come up with something different.
Well, I mean, I feel like in some ways waking up every morning was a breaking point for a long time because there's a confluence of events. Obviously, here we're talking about, I feel like I have little sort of flashbulb memories of the evolution of the web and the internet. But I feel like there are definitely some milestones where things started to change. Whatever, 94, 95. 95 is when I started making web pages and doing web work. But, you know, when we got the graphical web in 94, it felt like a big deal. When AOL started offering internet access, that became a big deal. But really, I would say by the late 90s, for me, so much more of my work, such as it was being conducted via email. Another thing that came in the side door that we can't forget, because it feels like a solved problem now, was what people call spam, basically unsolicited commercial email. It became really trying. Anybody, any idiot who kept their notifications on for email, God bless them, would just spend the whole day having their phone vibrate in their pocket if they had a smartphone back then. But that those things all came together to make it very difficult. And while, and I have to say at that same time, I don't have a particular breaking point, but I do know that if you're having dozens or hundreds of individual conversations with individual people, I hope to Christ it's with people that you really like and treasure, because that is a way to see your whole life just go out the window. If you spend your life walking from alcove to alcove, interacting with one person at a time, it's rarely the most effective way to get a lot of stuff done, unless that's how you like to work or need to work. So, you know, for me, it was just that I saw myself and my friends, I saw people feeling like, I'll say it again, like they had a second job. They had the job that they got the pay stub for, and then they had the job which was taking care of email. This is still true today for people like teachers. I can't imagine how my kid's teacher keeps up with it all. But this giant volume of stuff.
I think it's true for just about everybody. I think that most people do feel like they've got a second job. You know, I remember listening to the author Neil Gaiman. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Neil Gaiman, thanks. And
he's drawn a pretty broad red line about email.
He did. He said
I can either write books or I can answer your email. What do you want?
Yeah, he said I found that I was a person who was answering email. I stopped answering email and I got back to writing. So I guess that's what I'm wondering. Did you get to the point where you're like, I am spending all my time, you know, putting out other people's fires? Like, what led you to that moment, to get to that speech in 2007 at Google where you kind of lay out inbox zero that then has just taken over the world, rightly or wrongly?
Well, the two words have. I'm not sure people have actually learned much about the ideas. But, there's one thing I feel like I should mention. I sort of hinted at this before, but I'll touch the third rail here and say there's also an element of privilege to this, which is that, you know, the ability to get to decide how you're going to deal with email is almost a class issue in some ways.
Oh, definitely.
It's certainly at least a hierarchical issue.
Power issue, yeah.
Well, right. And the thing is, culture inside, over the years, I've become very interested in how culture works inside of companies. And I still really feel like, at best, the culture of your group is going to be defined by the most powerful people through two things. Basically what they reward and what they tolerate. And your company or your team, I don't mean to sound like a guru, but I really believe this, that if people very clearly see rewards. They see somebody, like maybe that person gets a private office or that person has something other people don't have, but they also see what's tolerated. And that's the sotto voce, kind of like the grace note through most companies is like, wow, that guy with the Corvette or the Ferrari or whatever, boy, he sure gets away with double parking and coming late to meetings. And that sends a signal to everybody on the team. Again, what do we reward? What do we tolerate? And I don't know if that's something that most managers take as seriously as they should. And if you tolerate the idea of people sending terrible emails, then you're going to have to deal with the problem of people receiving terrible emails.
Well, there's
not much
we
can do about what we receive. It's really about what people send. That's the problem.
And the research shows that a lot of leaders send these after-hour emails because we tend to not only tolerate but definitely reward people who seem to be working all the time.
Yes.
And that's how you make it through the ranks of leadership. And there's really interesting research that shows that the mere anticipation of an after-hour email from your supervisor or your boss creates more stress than actually getting that email. And so it puts everybody in the state of being in this kind of constant vigilance, like
this
fear. Exactly. So you can't kind of disconnect and enjoy the rest of your life necessarily. And it all comes from that, from power and privilege. Like you say, it's definitely a power relationship. But let's go back to you. I still want to figure out, how did you get to like inbox zero? And then, you know, I have not been able to find it on the web yet, but I've read about it in The Guardian, the 3,000 word screed where you disavow inbox zero. Oh. And then I want to know, where are you now and how many emails do you have in your inbox and what do you think?
Well, the irony of this is that it's actually a weirdly inbox zero-esque approach that I have to this, which is I have control of very, very few things in the world and extremely limited energy like everybody else. And that's just not a hill I want to die on. Just spending a huge amount of time trying to re-explain something that A, was meant to be useful to people, and B, has been just so broadly misunderstood. I'm not butthurt about it. I'm just exhausted by it. It's just it's become such a millstone that this 12-year-old idea is something that I'm supposed to constantly re-defend, even though people can't be troubled to listen to what I was actually trying to offer. So as far as the – which part should I answer first?
Whatever you'd like.
Oh, no, I'll go anywhere you want. Yeah, I posted something on my personal blog a while back because at a certain point, it just became a fun fish in a barrel thing to say, oh, Inbox Zero is so crazy. Nobody should spend all day in their inbox answering all their emails. To which I say, that's a really good idea because that's what I said. That's exactly what I said. Inbox Zero does not mean you always keep your inbox empty. It means you're an adult. You've got big boy or big girl pants, and you can make decisions about how you conduct yourself. And one of those ways that you can conduct yourself is remember, you allowed that into your life. You took that job. That whatever your situation is, if you've accepted that input, that is now something you have to take care of in a responsible way. And if you have to spend 8 hours a day doing email, then that's your job now. Mm-hmm. I don't know another way to slice that's more kind or honest. But the truth is, if that's your job, well, then something's got to change, or you have to put on your resume that you're an email doer. That's the only way I know around it. So where I am now, or where I've evolved to, is setting aside all the falderall about Inbox Zero. Frankly, I find that so much less stuff is happening with email than it used to. I mentioned the applications or service Slack, which I use. For some people, that's the bane of their existence. I've had great luck with Slack. I've made great friends in Slack. Mostly what I do these days are podcasts. And so when I, for example, on one of the networks that I'm on, we have a channel where it's just six of us dealing with that show. We don't talk about Doctor Who. We don't talk about Q4 results. We talk about, this is in the Dropbox, go get it there. Here's the titles. Let's pick one. Mm-hmm. Nobody else has to see that. The people over on the other channels don't even have to know about it. And that's so much better than sitting and waiting. You talked about some of this research. A woman at Microsoft years ago, Linda Stone, used to talk about something called email apnea, where they were supposedly, I've seen the papers on this, but supposedly people will actually hold their breath when they're doing their email.
Really?
This very heightened state.
Wow.
I mean, just where you, like you said, you end up beating yourself up, but what Buddhists call the second arrow. Like, you're the one who's tearing yourself apart about this stuff.
Ooh.
And getting mad at the big bad world. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I do feel like there's a lot less of that. I do feel like the enduring problem is still there. Say again?
No, you said that I was beating myself up with the second arrow, and that I was mad at the world. It's like, no, pretty much mad at myself.
The old proverb goes something like, you know, you're in battle and you get shot with an arrow, but then basically it's just this idea that I happen to believe in, which is how do you feel, and then how do you feel about how you feel? Because I do think there is kind of a meta level of cognition where most of the worst emotions, the sort of the seven dwarfs of bad emotions that we walk around with, are how we feel about how we feel, which sounds real woo-woo, but I find that to be very true because that's the part that you decided to add to this mixture. So
how do you feel about your email now? And how do you feel about how you feel about your email?
Oh, it's so easy. It's so easy because I get less. People are terrified to email me, which is awesome.
It's
like the
awesome
soup Nazi. They come up with their money and very carefully place it on the counter. I love that people
are
terrified. Well,
I did. If you remember, I tweeted at you first. I didn't email you because I didn't know how to find your email address.
And the system's working.
As
far as, a lot of what I do is I do find a lot of usefulness just in terms of like thinning the herd a little bit. I use Gmail, and Gmail has some pretty good stuff built into it. Like, their spam, I very rarely get stuff in spam that shouldn't have been there. So that is a mostly solved problem. It's certainly not the nuisance it was at the turn of the millennium. But there are functionalities in Gmail. Gmail gets pretty smart about learning this is a receipt. This is just a simple notification. There are built-in ways and there are plugins that will help it learn even better. But I get a fairly good amount of just normal good stuff in my inbox. And then there's an app that I use on iOS. A lot of apps have this now that'll let you do like one swipe to do a given action on all of these emails. So I can just archive 11 emails at a time, because there's nothing to be done about it. Sometimes I'll snooze it till later. I don't love doing that because it feels like kicking the can, as they say, down the road. But that's a lot of what I do now. Let me put it to you this way. I don't know about you, but my quote-unquote iPhone that I use, I've used an iPhone since 2008, the number of calls that I get on my iPhone that are even real is shockingly low for two reasons. people don't call each other anymore so much, right? People, what you get telemarketers, you get bots, you get all of these things going on. And it becomes a kind of, I don't know, like a honeypot where like anybody who knew me would know not to call me. So I don't worry about my phone like I used to. I mean, I still, if it's an emergency, obviously I want to know about it. But isn't that ironic that now anybody who calls me has flipped the bozo bit, as they say? Like that's anybody who would just call me out of nowhere, I don't have a lot of time for. So I think that's happened to some extent with email. But the underlying problem is still there. There's still always going to be great amounts of unknown in the world that you have some responsibility for. And I think that is still something that can make you a little bit crazy unless you better define your relationship to it and your commitment to it.
And so how you feel about your email, you don't feel that craziness. You don't feel that Wolverine in the drawer. And it sounds like you're kind of doing what you, I don't want to call it inbox zero since so many people, including myself, misunderstood it. But it sounds like you're kind of doing the same thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's the only sensible way to go. I mean, like, why? It would be like, let's go back to your mail at home, right? You probably got a mailbox at home. Once a day, you get mail in there. Can you imagine going back to your mailbox when you already know what's in there and just looking at it all again? It's mental. So, you would never, what are you going to do? Put your bills in the freezer? Are you a crazy person? Like, who would do that? You take out the bills, you recycle the junk, and you move on, and you stop thinking about your mailbox. And now your mailbox is serving you.
So how often do you, like, what's your practice on a day-to-day basis? And then, you know, does it not get in the way of your most important work?
I mean, it's pretty straightforward for me. This is something, I'm not here to be a Gmail advocate, except that it has really worked well. It's solid. It's worked well for me for a long time. But one thing I do is I'm kind of in the process of just using the Gmail app on iOS full time, even though it's not as fully featured as some things. One thing I do like about it is because Gmail has gotten pretty good about knowing what is quote unquote important. For the first time in probably 6 or 8 years, I've turned on email notifications.
I've turned mine off just so that
buzz
at me all the time.
Yeah, I would really categorize it as an experiment at this point, but so far it's been fine. My watch dings. And it says, you know, you got forwarded something from your wife about, you know, going to the doctor or whatever. And that's been super manageable. But no, I don't have Twitter notifications on. I don't have any other classic email notifications on. It's only because Gmail is so smart about that I'm experimenting with it. But on the one hand, A, it has not been out of hand. And on the other hand, B, it has not been that useful. So I may end up turning it off again. But no, for me, I get up in the morning. I have a look at what's in there. And I check in kind of throughout the day. Like all of us, I think there are times when we're, you know, like like a guard up on the wall with North Korea, like scanning for something that you're waiting for. Like if you want to get paid, you really want to get paid. If you're at a point of a dependency in your project where you can't move forward without more information from somebody, you'll be scanning and scanning and scanning. And everybody does that occasionally, and I think that's fine. But it isn't something I stress out about too much. Because in some ways, like the most valuable communications I get from people I know rarely come in email these days. And when they do, there's not enough volume of it. And this is kind of anticlimactic after all that drama, but it's pretty manageable for me.
That's exciting and hopeful to hear that there might be a light at the other end of the tunnel. There was a piece just recently in The Atlantic sort of arguing sort of the flip side of what I think is maybe the misperception of inbox zero.
They got it super wrong. That was wild.
Inbox infinity. Basically, just don't ever answer your email. Don't look at it. Don't think about it. That's the answer.
There's a funny thing on the internet. There's a certain kind of disposition on the internet that has become very popular, which I will just typify as meh. Which is to say, like, okay, I'm going to go poop on this thing that you do or like because it's not for me. So here's my Medium post about it. And frankly, I don't care. Like, if you don't like this or find it useful, why are we talking about it? It's so odd to me that people feel this need to go and interrogate other people's decisions and then like kind of take a dump on it. I mean, I guess that's just normal, but it's the willful misunderstanding of that that's a little frustrating to me. But the truth is, let's look at it this way. If you don't have a cat, you don't need to buy litter, right? Mm. If you don't have a kid, you don't need to worry about getting into schools. And if you're not concerned about your email and can throw it all away, why would you waste any of your time learning anything about any of this? you don't have a problem, or you don't admit you have a problem. In which case, I'm not sure how to respond to that. That's, to me, that is like somebody complaining why there are ads for cat litter if they don't have a cat. Well, grow up. I mean, there are people out there who are suffering from this and need a way into this. And there are tidy self-help versions of this that boil down to buying a book or getting a product. But it's so rare to find a real problem in the world that can be solved without changing the way you think about things. Like how you see the world, how you think about the world, and how you change your behavior. That is the bedrock of any self-improvement. It isn't about finding some kind of fake mustache you can slap on and pretend that you're somebody else. It's about taking ownership of what you're doing and then figuring out, like, is this making me more or less of the person that I would like to be? And then how do I adjust accordingly?
Okay, because that's what I was gonna ask you for, sort of your final parting thoughts. So rather than having people who struggle like me put on a fake mustache, what
if it works for you, you might look great with a fake mustache.
Yeah, I might. You know, I might just try that. But what do we need to be doing? And again, I'm just really curious. It's like I don't want the tips or tricks. Mm-hmm. How what do we need to do in our brains? What do we need to think when we go to our email box in the morning? What do I need to be thinking in my mind?
Let's see. I actually do think there are some little tips and tricks-ish things that can help that just make you a better person. As far as what to change about your philosophy or your approach, I just think you have to be candid with yourself about when you accept an input in your life, like in this case, email. I think you have to be candid with yourself about how much you're going to be able to do about it. And so one example is, if we had 2 hours to do this, I would walk you through a more therapeutic approach of saying, well, why do you feel bad about email? Like, what is causing that? And we could kind of do the ladder, the 7 steps of like walking through, okay, what about that? What about that? What about that? Because ultimately, it almost always comes down to our own expectations of ourselves. If you can't change that expectation of yourself, there's always going to be somebody out there that expects more of you than you're prepared to give. There are ways to steal people's attention at scale. And until you get with the fact that only you can decide what to do about that, your life's going to be very difficult. You know what I mean? Like if you get invited to a Christmas party on December 12th, you can't go to 16 other Christmas parties on December 12th. You get to pick one and only one or even none. So understanding the limitations of your time and attention can be very sobering. As far as I'll give you some specific stuff though, just to be a better person, start with sending better email. If there's anything that you could find out on your own without bugging somebody, do that first. Really try. There's a thing.
Brilliant.
Well, there's a thing called Google. It's a search engine you can go to and look up. Just literally type like a dumb ape pounding with your fists. Just type the words like, you know, Gilligan's Island, Marianne TV show. And you'd be amazed. It's Don Wells. It'll come right up. Whatever it is, put in your dumb
meat. In Love with the Professor.
Sure. Oh, he was great. You can but just use your dumb meat brain to type in what it is you're thinking about and find it out. That won't always work. But, you know, pull your own load before you ask somebody else. See if you can do it yourself. If you are going to ask something of somebody else, 2 things I think are so critical. Really get a good subject line. Not just a cute subject line, but get a subject line. I've worked inside of healthy work cultures where we do things like prepend with the letter Q for a question or REQ for a request or what have you. This can be so valuable inside of a team. So somebody can scan that list and instantly see if this is something I need to do something about. And then to the extent possible, have your entire email fit above the fold on the white screen on your phone. If you can do it, keep that email so short and don't talk about softball on Facebook. Begin by asking the person what you want. Unless you really need that social lubricant, I would ask in a very clear transient sentence, can you meet with me on Saturday, January 12th at 8:45 a.m. at this place? But be very specific because this is another problem. Why do you dread your email? Because you don't know what's in there. Even when you know what's in there, you haven't evaluated what's in there and decided what to do about it. Busy people love questions that can be answered with yes or no. And when you're trying to treat everybody like a busy person you respect and ask them something tangible that they can give you an answer to, and then do more than 50% of the load and trying to help along to getting whatever that state is. And if you're asking for favors from people or you're asking strangers for things, bear in mind, like they have their lives too. They have stuff that they're doing on that day, you know, and just send the kind of emails you wish you could receive. Kind, specific, brief.
It also sounds like what you're really asking people to do is to respect themselves and to recognize the sort of the limitations of time and attention. And to sort of put themselves, sometimes that feels so selfish, you know, that you need to respond to other people and other people's requests. But if you keep doing that, you'll just sort of be, you know, you'll find yourself sort of, what's the word I'm trying to, I see this image of just
torn
sort of like
asunder by the wild dogs of life.
Yeah, I was thinking something a little less violent, but yeah. Probably the similar outcome, that there'd be very little of you left.
Yeah.
So it sounds like, you know, is that sort of people need to kind of put themselves at the sort of at the center of the equation and their own sense of what's important and what they want out of their lives.
Yeah, you put it better than I could. I guess if, again, trying to just sort of summarize these kind of broad ideas, have an idea in mind. This is here. I'm just kind of cribbing something from a book called Getting Things Done by David Allen, but begin with
Love
the idea.
Book.
Well, but begin with the idea of what a successful outcome looks like. Like when I'm in my task manager, figuring out what I need to do, I name my projects what success looks like. And that could be something mm-hmm. as simple as get the trash cans to the curb by 7 o'clock Monday, whatever it is. But begin with this idea in mind of, I will know that this is done when this thing is taken care of, right? So if you treat your own world of productivity and then respectfully treat other people in that way, I think that can't help but make things good, but also understand that not only is no an answer, but not responding is also an answer. Not responding is no.
Oh.
Take it as no, walk away, don't follow up. Please stop following up. You're killing me. That's one good way to be respectful with other people.
Okay, I have a really hard time with that, not responding.
Well, how does that get visited upon you?
That is just so hard. Yeah.
PR people, that kind of thing?
No, PR people, that doesn't bother me, you know, because, you know, they're looking for, they have a job to do, and I respect that. But, yeah, no, not respond. There are certain things that I don't have a hard time responding to, like if, you know, gift basket place says, come buy more stuff here. That's not a problem. But yeah.
Can I give you a good response?
If a person sends me an email and I don't respond, that's really hard for me. I have yet to respond.
It hurts your heart. But remember, a lot of those folks are doing some of them are doing it at scale, and it's crazy making. There's a response that I give that probably sounds rote at this point, but is an honest answer. If somebody asks me to do something and it meets the criteria, it doesn't meet the criteria that I need, I will say to them, I'm sorry, I don't have time to do a great job on that right now. And I think that's nicer than no, but it's candid, which is that if I did this, I would probably screw it up because I have other stuff going on. It's something I like to say, and I think I might have said this in the email to you. I think there's such a big difference between being busy and being time constrained. Mm-hmm. I've spent 40 years, well, I'm 52 now, but I've spent many years getting to the point where I can be time constrained rather than busy. We all get busy, but do you want to live busy all the time? Busy is when by unhappy accident of timing or poor management, we all have too much to do. Is that a way that you want to be forever? I'm very happy. I'm going to pick my daughter up exactly an hour and 4 minutes from now. And that is a time constraint I'm very happy to have. It lets me say to people, and I probably said this in our email, like, here's when I can start. Here's when I can end. Here's whether I can do this well right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you mentioned before how important it is to respect ourselves. I think it's a little bit like, you know, defensive driving for the human soul. Like, you've got to be able to take care of your stuff, not overextend yourself, or the stuff that really matters to you is going to fall by the wayside. So yeah, I mean, sometimes you have to say to people, I couldn't do that. If you want to contact me again in 8 weeks, that's fine, but that's not anything that I could do well right now.
Defensive driving for the soul. I love
that's
that.
And you can have that.
I love that. And I do recognize when we were emailing that you had a pretty hard stop. So I want to.
Well, they'll send her to the police. If I don't get her, I got to be there.
Exactly. I totally get it. So Merlin, thank you so much for taking time to talk. I'm going to see what I can do about my mindset, and I will let you know if I can, just stop responding to every single email I get.
Thanks for having me on, Bridget. I appreciate it.
Great to talk to you.
All
right.
Okay, so do you want me to Dropbox the file?
Yeah, that would be great. That'd be perfect.
I can just send a Dropbox link and that'll be cool.
Yeah, that should be fine, right, David?
To Melissa, David, you. Just to you is good.
What do you want? How do you think, David?
Just drop in. If it's not you, just drop in an email that you want in the Skype call.
Yeah, I'll just send. Okay, why don't I send it to
Let's generate some email. Email.
Okay,
email.
No, send it to David. Send it to David.
Okay, drop in David's email address, please.
Okay. Okay, I will. Do you want it by email? Or you want me to tweet it to you?
Oh, David's email by a tweet? Just put it in the Skype. Can you put it in the Skype window?
Yeah,
or I can write it down.
Oh, here. I'm just sending it to you in an email.
Okay. And I'll zip that up and put it on Dropbox, and you'll be good to go.
Here, I'm actually CCing him on the email I'm sending you.
Excellent.
I'm creating
excellent.
Two new emails.
Let's start a new chain.
God. Yeah. Okay, great. Merlin, thank you so much.
My
really
pleasure.
Fun to talk to you. I appreciate it.
And so did you send that?
Sending it now. No, I can't multitask. See, I'm trying to unitask. I'm talking to you.
Multitasking is an illusion. Have me back on.
I know.
Okay,
it is
cool.
An illusion. I'm trying not to multitask as I do this.
You're not multitasking. You're just changing gears quickly. It's so important to know the difference.
Well, exactly. So I can't change. I can't talk to you and send this email at the same time. So just shut up and let me
say it, sister. I totally know what you're talking about. Okay, I'll look forward to that. Thanks for your time.
It sounds good. Thanks, Merlin.